I'm David W. Berner, and this is The Writer Shed. Well, hello, everybody. We are into the third installment now of the School of Joyful Writing. I appreciate you coming along for the ride here on this kind of experiment, but it's really been a lot of fun, and the feedback has been great too, so I appreciate that. If you're new to us here, let me give you a sense of who I am and what I do and why this is even something you may want to listen to. So I've been a writer for a long time. I was in journalism for a long time. I did a lot of writing journalistically, but then also started to write memoir and fiction and have 11 books to my name now, with a 12th one coming out hopefully later this year. I haven't gotten the word exactly from the publisher on that one, but hoping that that will happen at the end of this year. And my writing life has also included teaching. I've taught at the university level for some time. Also have done a lot of workshops and continue to do workshops through Gotham Writers in New York and through some other venues. And have done workshops all my life, at least my adult life, from time to time. And I decided through a lot of contemplation and a lot of encouragement, actually, from a lot of listeners to the Writer Shed podcast, to embark on this idea of kickstarting the writing life for you in 2023. So we started it in January as people started to make their resolutions. And here we are with the School of Joyful Writing. And this is part three. Now, why do we call it the School of Joyful Writing? Because I think writing should be joyful. This should not be a job. This should be an endeavor that just makes your heart soar. And whatever it is you write, whatever you like, whatever genre you think you want to write in, or if you're just starting out writing and you just want to get some encouragement, I think this is a place to be. And I really believe in that. I firmly believe that writing is a soulful endeavor, that it opens up the heart, it opens up the mind. Even if you don't publish a thing, writing can be really special to your being. And I firmly believe that. It may sound, you know, sort of new agey or spiritual or something, whatever you want to call it, but I really do believe that writing is a process and an art form that can help just about anybody. So this is the third part of the School of Joyful Writing. If you haven't listened to one and two, I encourage you to do that. There are four parts in all. This one is called What Do You Want to Write and How to Find Out What That Is. So a lot of people say, oh, I want to write, or I want to write a novel, or I want to write a short story, or I want to write some poetry. But, you know, maybe they haven't done it before, or they haven't done anything like that before. Or maybe they have, and they're switching gears like me. I was a journalist and started to write memoir and fiction. And I think it's time to start thinking about what it might be and how to kind of proceed in that direction, what it might be that you want to write. So one way, I want to start out with something that might be a little bit unusual. One way I think you can find out is to immerse yourself in what has been called in the history of writing, if you want to call it that, contemplative writing. Now, the history of contemplative writing is what it doesn't necessarily mean today. So the tradition of contemplative writing was spiritual, religion, Christianity. Thomas Merton, the Trappist monk, the mystic, the poet, the author, the philosopher, he was a contemplative writer. But it's not always linked entirely to those things. What is it? What is contemplative writing? And why would it be something that you would begin your writing life with, or begin your process for finding out what you want to write? Why does it matter? Well, it's meditative. It's sometimes reflective. Reflective, the contemplative writing that finds you in yourself in a way. It discovers things for you. It's writing that builds on or creates some degree of reflection. For me, contemplative writing, constructed partially from the words of one of America's greatest essayists, Joan Didion, is to believe that you write entirely to find out what you're thinking. And that is a paraphrase of what Joan Didion said. One could argue that this is true for her essays, but also for her novels. She writes to discover and then to understand. To me, for the purposes of confession, this is the foundation of contemplative writing. Didion is only one of many. Poets like Gary Snyder and Jim Harrison are also in this category. You can undoubtedly add Henry David Thoreau in that group, and Annie Dillard, and Robert McFarlane, and Gretel Ehrlich, the author of one of my all-time favorite books called The Solace of Open Spaces. It's a gorgeous narrative, mindful about nature and renewal, and it really is contemplative writing. But it's not necessarily spiritual. It's not religious, right? My most recent contemplative writing hero, though, is Patti Smith. You've heard me talk about her many times on this podcast. Some of you are probably tired of me talking about Patti Smith, but read books like M-Train or Year of the Monkey. They are marvelous. There's also a great publisher out there called Homebound Publications, remarkable in its thinking about what contemporary contemplative writing is about. On its website, it notes that the founder considers herself a contemplative writer. She says, "I don't believe that contemplative literature needs to be contained within the context of religion and spirituality. Some of the most contemplative experiences can take place during our day in and day out life, like having an in-depth conversation with a friend at the local diner over coffee, and then, I suppose, a kind of blue-collar philosopher, you know?" So at Homebound Publications, she says that she sets out to publish books that bring forward new ideas, books that stop and make you think about your life. Now, how does that fit into your writing and find out what you want to do? Well, I am certain that contemplative writing can do that for you. And the idea of that is to not overly think it, is just to write whatever comes into your heart at that moment. It could be a poem, it could be a paragraph, it could be a descriptive paragraph about what you see in front of you. It could be a dialogue exchange. It could be anything. So I'm going to give you a couple of, a list really, of four things that I think will help you think about what contemplative writing is and how it will help you discover, you know, what you really find soulful for your writing, what connects with you. The first thing is to not overplan your writing. Don't overthink it. Do not outline. Do not think about, here's what I want to do. Like, don't set up a to-do list for writing. I think that's the wrong approach, at least at this stage. For me, writing is what Norman Mailer used to call it, the spooky art. It sort of arises out of some mysterious place. And if you try to homogenize it with plans and outlines and formulas, you dilute it, I think. There are many writers who believe in outlining, but the good ones who do still permit that mystical idea to sort of come out, to supersede. And when I write, I only have a vague idea of what it is I'm taking on. I really kind of let what's in me come out. I don't make it happen. I sort of let it come out. So don't have a plan. Don't think of it like that or a to-do list. Number two is do not consider plot. We hear so much about plot in writing. We hear this a lot in workshops. You know, your story has to have a plot, right? Well, not in the traditional sense, at least. Don't think about plot. Plot for me comes out of a formula, a sort of formula that comes from a cookie-cutter approach to things. This is not to say that those who write entirely plot-based works are wrong, not at all. Instead, I like to define what some call plot as conflict-driven. This encompasses a lot of things. Conflict can be as tiny as or as enormous as the story permits. It can be external or internal, no matter what. Good writing emerges from shades of the spectrum of conflict, not out of predetermined plot. So don't think that you have to have a plot in this beginning process of what you are finding out about yourself and your writing. The third thing is to write entirely for yourself. I do not write to an audience. I do not write to a marketplace. Now, there are consequences to that. I don't sell a lot of books sometimes for something I write because I don't sort of go at a marketplace. I don't try to find the hole in the market and then write for that market. I do not do that. I don't think you should do that in the beginning, at least in your path to writing, to do that either. Not that I ignore the reader. That's not what I mean. I simply have to satisfy my contemplative realities first. I do wish, of course, to connect with the reader through that process, but I don't think of that as the first thing. And number four, do not consider genre. So I get a lot of people in workshops who say, I want to write fiction, fantasy fiction. I want to write science fiction. I want to write, what is pejoratively called chick lit, I think. But, well, now I think a lot of it is called book club lit, but you know what I mean. So the French novelist John Malachy wrote that the only time I know that something is true is the moment I discover it in the act of writing. Sort of like what Joan Didion said, right? The creator nonfiction writer, Dindy Moore, wrote about this too. He has contended that to get to that particular place, the writer must sort of wander, sort of meander, lose himself in the writing, and in the end discover how all he has uncovered fits together, and then he must surprise the hell out of himself, right? He discovers something through that writing. Write with the heart first. You can label what it is later. You can give it a genre name later. You know, genres are really, they really just help bookstores. They just help us determine where it should go on the shelf. It helps you categorize when you're looking for something on Amazon. That's really all genre does. It's really a marketing tool, a selling tool. It's not necessarily a literary tool. So doing those things, I think, will move you forward to finding it is what you really want to write about. Because if you just let it flow, whatever you find joyful, whatever you find soulful, whatever you find deep in your heart will come out. If you really allow yourself just to write for yourself with no plan, with no thought process of where it fits in the world of genre, it will just emerge. And I think that's what contemplative writing can help you with. All right, so on the same vein, I wanted to talk about a little bit about some things you should break, some rules you should break. Now, these are things you hear all the time at workshops, but in terms of finding what you really want to write, I want you to think about what you've been told or what you've read about or what you've heard in the past. And that doesn't necessarily mean that these have been bad things. I just think they have become so ingrained in the world of workshops and writing that we forget that they sometimes need to be broken, these rules. So let me go through these things with you, and maybe this will also help you find your place in the writing world. So one thing you hear all the time, don't tell, show, right? You've heard this before, and sometimes it's a hard concept to understand. It confuses writers. Telling is still essential to a story, though. It's contemplation, especially in essay and explanation and backstory. It helps move the narrative along. I've heard show and tell call scene and summary before, and I may have read that somewhere too, but I'm not able to attribute it right now. What makes more sense to me sometimes, though, is a scene is best. That's the show. Give me a scene, like a moment in time with dialogue and description, and be specific. Sometimes the summary is really good, and that's the tell. Now, what I mean about summary is not what you learned in high school. You know, you write an opening paragraph, you write three paragraphs, and then you kind of summarize. That's not what I mean by summary. What I mean by summary really is reflection on what you've written. The inner thought, the sort of inner dialogue, that's what I mean by that. So the second thing is, and you've heard this a million times, don't use adverbs. Stay away from them. Well, great writers like Stephen King and E.B. White and others have told writers to get rid of adverbs completely, yet they show up in great writing. It's not the adverb that's the devil here. It's the use of the adverb, more specifically, the overuse of it. So as a dialogue tag, he said quietly is worthy of the trash bin, but he whispered, well, that could work if it's not overused. So be cautious about adverbs, be judicious about them, but don't kill the adverb. Don't kill it completely, all right? Just be aware of it. And the third thing is, don't start a story with the weather. How many times have you may have heard that or read that or been told that by another writer? Well, there's a lot of great writing out there that starts with weather, all right? There's nothing wrong with the weather. The trouble is that if you do it with everything, you set up a moment in time with the weather. You know, the thing is, readers love people. So write about people. But it's okay to write about people dealing with the weather. Now, here's the opening of Hemingway's A Very Short Story. One hot evening, they carried him up onto the roof, and he could look out over the top of the town. Okay, so you're talking about a little bit of an evening, a hot evening, so weather. But why did they take him to the top of the roof, and why did they have to carry him, right? So weather helps the scene, but you certainly don't want to start with, it was a dark and stormy night, right? That's kind of a joke now, right? Okay, so the fourth thing of this list is don't use any word but said as a dialogue tag. Well, that's something you hear a lot, right? Don't use anything but said. Said is a fine, good thing, right? Always it's a good thing, but you don't have to be exclusive with said. Again, it's about being cautious, judicious. What works better are the use of expressive verbs instead of said. So try like he whispered, like I mentioned before. But again, go easy on this. Be cautious. Said is great, and for the most part, it is what you should use. Use it. But it's okay now and again to mix it up. Move along with the light feet and watch those L-Y words, though. He ran quickly. Yuck. Don't do that, okay? But it doesn't mean you can't use something other than said. Just be cautious about what you do with it. As always, though, write with purpose. Let's hear your voice. Rules are helpful, but they're meant to be bent and broken. More than anything, read the masters. Read the people that you love. They are your teachers. And yes, sometimes even they will use an adverb or two. Hemingway again, whether you revere him or not, this is Ernie using adverbs, and he was pretty good at it. You ready? It was a frightfully hot day. We jammed an absolutely perfect barricade across the bridge. It was simply priceless. That's a Hemingway line. There are adverbs in there. Now, whether you think that's a great stretch of words or not, he used them. It's okay to use an adverb. Just don't overuse it. Don't over-ly everything, you see, right? Okay? That's what I want you to do. That's what I want you to think about. And I'm really not a big proponent of rules and either breaking them or making them, because it makes you forget about the process that I started this whole conversation with today, is that I want you to just let it flow, because that's how you find out what you love, what you can write, what you feel good at writing, what you have a knack for already, what's already in your soul. So do those things first. All right, the last part of this this part three of the School of Joyful Writing is to sort of knock out the whole idea that there's a thing called writer's block. You're trying to unstuck yourself, you know, you're kind of reluctant, or you feel vulnerable writing, and you don't know, is this going to be any good, or does anybody care? Remember, you're writing for yourself when you're going through this process first. You're writing for yourself. So think of it as no one else is going to read it, right? You're just trying to discover your place in the writing world. So, I'll give you an example. So, I was working on a novel one time. About halfway through, I thought I was stuck. So, what did I do? Well, I thought to myself, I've been here before. Unsure of what I'll come next. I don't know. I'm not a planner or an outliner, as I've said before, and I write in a way that lets the story sort of evolve. And I try not to do heavy editing while I'm writing. I work best when I let the writing kind of control me and not the other way around. But sometimes the wheels find the mud and everything kind of stops. I know it's going to clear at some point and the wheels are going to catch solid ground again. Still, I want things to kind of turn around right now. I'm a little impatient about that. I want it to happen now, not later. So I'm inherently impatient. So what to do about that? Well, here are four things I think can help me, can help you. They've helped me and my students in the past, and they could help you too. This is about unstucking yourself, I call it. Sort of getting past that vulnerability, that belief that nobody cares or I can't write. When you begin writing and you find yourself in these places in your writing, whatever it may be, nonfiction, fiction, science fiction, fantasy, poetry, whatever it is, think about these things and how they fit into this. And I think they will help you sort of get unstuck. There are four things here. So number one, create another obstacle for whoever is your protagonist. Now, if you're writing memoir or personal essay, you are the protagonist, right? It can be a major or minor hiccup in the story, simply something that kind of creates another conflict or narrative transition. Think about an obstacle. That might help you get unstuck. Number two, focus for a time on the supporting characters only. So if there are other people in your story, whether they're fiction or nonfiction, what happens to them that relates to their relationship with the protagonist. That can sort of help you get unstuck where your story is. Stop writing. That's the third thing. Yeah, stop writing. Stop writing and read. Something in someone else's story can trigger a whole idea for you. Not that you want to steal that idea, but how a writer moves the story along is a matter of craft. So you want to study it. Study and read the people and the books that you love. The books, the blog posts, the short stories, whatever it is, the memoir, the essays, whatever it is, read the people that you already love. And then the fourth thing is try writing the ending before you write anything else. Go way far ahead in your narrative and finish it. Now, this might reveal the many things that have to happen before that ending can happen, and then you can fill in those blanks. So I'll give you an example. My book, A Well-Respected Man, one of the first novels that I wrote, I knew what the ending was going to be. Now, it kind of conflicts against what I've said before, that I kind of let the writing sort of happen and figure it out as I go along. Well, I didn't know how I was going to get to that ending, so that's what was revealed as I wrote. But I knew what that last scene was. I had it in my head, and I wanted it to be that way. So I figured out a way to sort of get there. Now, was that a plan or an outline? No, it really wasn't, because I didn't know how I was going to get there, and I didn't really know how I was going to get there until I started to write. And that kind of got me unstuck. And what I mean by that is it helped me believe in what I was doing. It helped me sort of have a purpose to what I was doing. And that's what I'm trying to get you to do. That's kind of what I mean by getting unstuck. It's about contemplative writing. It's about writing for yourself, letting the story come out while you write so that what is truly inside you begins to surface. And then that is what your genre is, or your place in your writing world. It starts to reveal itself on its own. And if you feel like you're getting stuck in that moment, then try one of the four things I just talked about. And that can maybe reignite it, get that flame going again. One more thing. Do what I've done recently. Move on to something else. It's not abandoning that first project or the thing that you're writing now. You know, maybe you're writing something and you're not really sure what to do with it, or the muse is not there, which is also garbage, by the way. You know, writer's block is not a thing. And we'll talk about that lastly here in a moment. So move on to something else. You know, write a little poem or do something different. It might spark, you know, the little fire that you need for the piece that you started. So Henry Miller once suggested that writers should write one thing at a time, immerse themselves in one story only, and not jump around from narrative to narrative, idea to idea. And generally, I think that's probably a good plan. However, sometimes adjusting to another project, one that is far different from the project that you're doing at the moment, it'll get you unstuck, right? It'll get you out of that. It could be the solution. Now, the last thing today is writer's block. Number one, there is no such thing, people. There is no such thing. Inspiration is highly overrated. I'm a firm believer that writing is a craft. Writing is a job. You get up and you write. Now, it may be crap. It may be lousy. It may be not the kind of thing you really want to be writing. Or it may not be anything connected to, you know, the bigger thing that you have in mind. But get words on paper. Just get it down. I'm not a big believer in word count. Some people think, oh, I got to write 1,000 words a day and I'm going to do that, or I'm going to write for an hour a day and I'll do that. That's good if you're trying to find discipline, and that's a good thing too. We've talked about that here. But writer's block is not a thing. It's about going to work. It's about doing your craft. I've got to chop wood today to keep the fire going. I'm going to chop wood. I'm not going to wait for inspiration to chop wood. Okay, so I really firmly believe that. And I think that all fits into the theme of this part three of the School of Joyful Writing. Finding your place, finding what kind of writing you want to do. Write without a plan, write contemplatively, write through your soul and your heart. Let it emerge, let it teach you what it is you want to write by not having a plan. Just start to write whatever comes to your head. It may make no sense, but something out of it will emerge that will point to what it is that you really want to write, that you really believe in, that is your voice in a way. Okay. I hope that helps you. That's part three, Joyful Schoolful Writing. I have a couple of exercises. Not a big fan of exercises. I think I've talked about that here many times. At my website, davidwburner.com, you click on Joyful Writing, and you'll find the exercises for this particular installment, number three. I am so grateful for you joining me for this, and I hope you're finding that helpful to you in some way. So number four, part four of this series is coming up on the 1st of March. And of course, you can listen to these at any time. Maybe you're listening to this, at a time that it doesn't get dropped, but that's perfectly fine. But my point is, number four will be dropped on March 1st, and it's called Committing to the Creative Life. What do you have to do to actually find yourself living the life of a writer? That doesn't necessarily mean someone who publishes. That means somebody who writes. They can go hand in hand, but not always. So that's number four. That's coming up next. Again, I thank you very much for being part of the School of Joyful Writing, being a student of mine, if you will. I don't really think of it that way, but some of you might. And I appreciate you listening, as always, to The Writer's Shed. You can find out more about The Writer's Shed at writershedpress.com. And at The Writer's Shed on Medium, you can also sign up for our newsletter there and find us at Writer's Shed Press on Twitter. And of course, all the episodes of The Writer's Shed are available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.